Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. We have faced challenges we expected and others we could never have imagined. We have shared in the heights of victory and the pains of hardship. We endured floods and fires and storms. But through it all, we have seen the beauty of America's soul and the steel in America's spine. Each test has forged new American heroes to remind us who we are and show us what we can be. We heard tales of Americans like Coast Guard Petty Officer Ashley Leppert. Ashley was aboard one of the first helicopters on the scene in Houston during Hurricane Harvey. Through 18 hours of wind and rain, Ashley braved live power lines and deep water to help save more than 40 lives. That was an excerpt from President Trump's 2018 State of the Union address, which my guest today, Ashley Leppert, was honored with being not only invited to, but also got a nice little name drop thrown in there by the president, which was pretty awesome. So anyway, welcome to the show, Ashley. I sort of let the president do the hard work with writing your intro for this episode, but why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Awesome. Well, hey, Scott, thanks for having me. That is a pretty epic intro. I'm still greatly humbled every time I hear that. So, like you said, my name is Ashley Leppert, and I was an avionics electrical technician in the United States Coast Guard for about 14 years prior to medically retiring. And I was stationed in New Orleans back in 2017 when Hurricane Harvey had hit over in Houston. So I was there, one of the first crews out. We did some amazing rescues, and it was a complete honor to be there at the State of the Union representing such a small service. As you know, we're kind of the redheaded stepchildren of the military a little bit. So, I digress. Anyways, that's a little bit of my military background. Currently, as I mentioned, I'm medically retired. So I did write a book sort of about my life and some things that I overcame called The Hurricane Within. So now currently my new passion project is to really just share my story and inspire as many people as I can with some things that I've been able to overcome and just show my resiliency with.
And that's awesome. Yeah. And I appreciate you coming on the show to share some of your story. Obviously we're not going to give all the spoiler alerts away, you know, all the spoilers away for your book, but you know, enough to, I think, get everyone interested in, going out and buying that book. Because I think just from what I've learned about you and your story, I think it's really interesting. And I think it's a great story. So, so I do have to ask, what was it like getting invited to the State of the Union? Did they call you first? Did you get a letter? Did it go through your chain of command somehow? Like, how did all that work for you?
After Hurricane Harvey had happened, as you can probably attest to, you know, we go out, we do our job, and we don't really, expect any accolades or anything from it. We just went out, we did the best job that we could. We were very proud of what we did, but it was just like, okay, back to work. We need helicopters up in the air and things fixed. So I kind of went right back to a normal routine. But one day I was on the hangar deck working and my phone rang, and normally I keep my phone on vibrate on the hangar deck, so I looked at it and it was a number that I didn't know. So I, obviously didn't answer it just like a lot of people. And then I got the phone number again. And so three times this number had called me. And so the third time I answered the phone, hello, kind of annoyed, thinking it was a telemarketer. And here it was, somebody from the White House who was hello, this is so-and-so from the White House. I'm calling to cordially invite you on behalf of the President and the First Lady to be an honored guest at the State of the Union. And as you can imagine, my first instinct was, okay, who's playing a joke on me? What's going on here? And so, of course, I was completely, jaw-dropped. And so it was that moment that I got invited. And it kind of was a big shock to me. I didn't realize in that moment that the stories of our crew's rescues had gone up the chain of command so high. And, you know, I guess President Trump at that time was looking for somebody to represent the Coast Guard for all the, you know, rescues that we had done during the hurricane season. So it just was an overwhelming feeling of joy and obviously being excited and proud to represent not only my crews, but our entire service.
Well, I'm actually glad that you said the that your reaction was pretty much like, you know, who is this, you know, is it a telemarketer or whatever. And I only asked the question because we actually have something in common in that we both were invited to Washington by President Trump. My family is a Gold Star family after my brother was killed in action in Afghanistan. And every year, President Trump invited 50 Gold Star families to the White House every year around Memorial Day. And we got invited to that in 2019. And so the reason why I ask you about how you got invited is because when we got that phone call, very similar to your situation from the White House, I almost blew it off as if it was some sort of scam. Like, you know, I get so many spam calls on a daily basis that I'm so cynical, you know, whenever someone I don't know calls me. And that's exactly the same reaction that I had. So I was thinking, why would the president even want me to come to Washington? They're probably going to ask me about my car warranty or something after that.
That's so funny. I was just going to say that because I swear I get that call probably once a week and I'm like, how do these people even get my number? Like, right. So yeah, I was definitely taken aback by that. And of course, once we started talking a little bit more and the credentials were explained a bit more, we kind of realized the enormity of the conversation that I was having, but it did take me a minute.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, anyways, we're not here to talk about my thing, at the White House or anything like that. We're here to talk about you and your story. And so let's talk about Hurricane Harvey a little bit here. That's the event that the president described in the State of the Union address, where he mentioned you. And I'm sure there's much more to the story than what he mentioned there. So could you tell us a little bit about the situation, the hurricane and your role in the rescue efforts?
Absolutely. So kind of looking back, so the Coast Guard, we train all the time, and aviation specifically, our job is very critical and based on training and training well. So when we do encounter situations like Hurricane Harvey, we can go out and we can efficiently succeed in every mission that we do. So how the Coast Guard works is it's kind of like I'm a two part of a job, a jack of all trades, if you will. So when I'm not standing duty, I'm an avionics electrical technician. I troubleshoot things and maintain all of our avionics equipment. But when I'm standing duty on call, that means for a 24-hour period, I'm along with my two pilots and my rescue swimmer, we're on call in case there's anybody out in the water that needs our assistance. So I happened to be on call through the weekend of Hurricane Harvey, and about 3 a.m, I got a call. And of course, myself and my crew, we were all very acutely aware of just how big this was. Typically a hurricane hits the coast and kind of dissipates. Well, Hurricane Harvey was very different because it hit the coast and it kind of just sat there for many days over Houston, just dumping tons of rain, which obviously was something that nobody had prepared for. So I had gotten a call that we were heading out there, and so I packed my bag and sort of didn't really, realize the enormity of the situation. And we're heading out there, and it was just like, boom. The second we got in the area, it was just like pure chaos. I mean, there was calls coming in about, pregnant women stuck in apartment buildings, that were going to just about to give birth that needed to be saved. Just people with heart attacks, like very serious illnesses, were the ones that we were focusing on first. And for about 3 days straight, that's kind of all we did was rescue, drop them off, rescue, drop them off. And mind you, we're literally in the middle of a hurricane flying. The visibility is extremely low. We're not familiar with the area of responsibility, so we don't know really where the power lines are that good, buildings, et cetera. So and just to back up a little bit, too, is my job as a flight mechanic is to keep the pilots safe, make sure I'm on the radios, talking to headquarters about where our location is, where we're heading to. So it's kind of, you know, your head's on a swivel.
Right.
So my head was even more on a swivel, being that there was such bad weather conditions. So,
yeah, I cannot imagine that flying a helicopter through hurricane strength winds, especially, you know, the size of that particular hurricane, which was pretty intense, from what I understand. I cannot imagine that that would be an easy job. It was probably very nerve wracking to be flying through that.
Yeah, you know, and it's so crazy because I look back, and to be completely honest with you, you know, I can't speak for everybody else, but for me specifically, I think for a split second, I realized, holy crap, this is dangerous as hell. I hope I get home alive. But then that immediately went away, and it was just like, boom, you kick in training mode, you meet people in trouble, and your personal needs go out the window. You don't worry about, I'm thirsty, I'm hungry, you got to use the restroom. You constantly are basically being fueled by adrenaline. And so, honestly, it wasn't until I got home 4 days later when I sort of started to decompress and that stress slowly left my body, where I realized just kind of the impact of what we had gone through and done. And, you know, I thank God that I was home safe and sound.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That sometimes the adrenaline just kicks in and gets you through the situation. And, you know, after you've had a chance to decompress and, you know, take a look back at what it is that you just did, do you actually realize the enormity of the situation? Where were most of these people? Were they like sitting on top of their roofs? Were you plucking them out of the water? I know the president mentioned that you had helped save over 40 lives, which I'm sure in and of itself is emotionally draining. But, you know, like this must have been, you know, people all over the place. Is that kind of accurate?
Yes, sir. So honestly, it's really hard to explain, but I think the best term that I had to describe the whole situation was that it was very apocalyptic. It was sort of like, you know, you see those movies where like a huge, you know, event happens and it's just pure chaos. I mean, the streets were filled with water. The water was halfway up to almost everybody's roof. There was people on top of roofs. There was people gathered in small patches of dry land, if there was any. There were people on their balconies waving towels and t-shirts at us. I mean, even the animals, that was really kind of a hard thing for me to watch too, is, you know, you would see, deceased animals floating in the water, or, you know, a dog tied up to a fence with, you know, rising water all around it. And, you know, those kind of thoughts really just stuck with me. But you know, again, and that's, you know, not to digress, but that's really why it was really important for me to write my book and share my stories, because I came home and I truly did not know what the term PTSD was. I did not know that the trauma that I witnessed and was a part of out there would, you know, in itself affect me and my, you know, psychology and my processing of the whole thing. So yeah, it was pure chaos out there, and it affected me more than I had thought that it would, truthfully. So yeah, that's why it was really important for me just to kind of touch that topic in my story and, you know, share with people that you don't have to be over, you know, per se in Afghanistan dodging bullets or, you know, whatever the case may be. Like, trauma happens in so many different types of scenarios, both in the civilian and military world. So, but yeah, sorry, again, I digress, but
that's good.
A pretty crazy time out there.
Yeah, no. And I think that's an important point, is that, you know, there are lots of traumas that can trigger, you know, a PTSD in people. And it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't necessarily have to be surviving, you know, bullets and IEDs and all this other stuff over in a foreign country. It can be, you know, something like a traffic accident, or it could be something, you know, some other trauma that someone experiences, and that could cause that kind of response in people. And certainly, you know, seeing all these dead animals, I'm sure there were some people as well that didn't make it. And all that type of stuff, it probably does affect, affect people, and it will affect everybody in differently, you know, how they process the situation. But, you know, I have to imagine that, you know, going through that is not an easy thing to do. So, so what were some of the things that you went through in terms of your coping, you know, after the fact?
So, you know, honestly, I came back and I, you know, everybody who is a first responder or wants to help people, and that's a generalization, but I guess I'm speaking for myself here, but I came back and, you know, I had this hero mentality, like, I'm strong, I got this, you save people, we did a great job, like, let's move on with life. And then, you know, I just realized slowly but surely that I just was not myself. I was very reclusive, and I'm very outgoing and I love hanging out with my friends, but I found myself more and more coming up with excuses to avoid friends and just being at home. And, you know, honestly, for like the first 3-4 days I came home, I didn't even turn my TV on. I just wanted to be in pure silence. Mm-hmm. It just was such a sensory overload while I was out there that I really just did not know how to handle the after effect. And I will say, you know, my command was amazing. They gave all of us some downtime, you know, to decompress. We had SISM training, which is, you know, just sort of after big events like hurricane rescues and whatnot, you know, we talk with people and get in a group and sort of like group counseling, if you will. And there's also counseling just for one person. But, you know, I handled it the best way that I knew how at the time. And I realized more and more that my coworkers who were with me, some of them also were dealing with the same things that I did. And I didn't think that we really were going to talk about it. And then we ended up talking about it. And it made me feel so much better to know, like, okay, holy crap, I'm the only one that's kind of dealing with all this stuff. And so just by talking about it and realizing the normalcy of what we were feeling just really helped the healing process for me.
And you're absolutely right. It is a normal thing to go through, to experience these traumas, and your reaction to it was completely normal. You know, it, and being able to talk about it with other people, especially the people who went through it with you, probably helped you feel like, you know, you're not alone here. You know, it's not like you're an abnormal person or you have some strange reaction to the situation that nobody else is having, you know, when you start talking to people, you kind of realize, well, geez, you know, this was pretty significant, and, you know, I'm probably okay to be feeling the way I'm feeling.
Yes. Yes. And you know what, if I'm being honest with you, I think for me personally, I felt like, oh my gosh, if I bring this up, you know, my guy counterparts at work are going to be like, oh, she's just being an emotional girl or this or that. And I truly, like, I know that sounds silly because I know that they, you know, the people that really loved me and, you know, respected me at work, I know would never think that. But like, again, that's that human mentality of, oh, I got this. I'm good. And then, you know, coupled with, I don't want them to think that I'm being an emotional lady. You know what I mean? But right. That wasn't the case. And, you know, the more and more I realized it was, you know, just a false insecurity I was planting in my own mind, the easier it was for me to open up to people and, you know, talk with my buddies about it.
Well, I think this is a good kind of segue into the book. You know, I want to make sure we have some time to talk about the book, you know, what it's all about. I know, you know, part of it we covered already with, you know, in terms of the rescue efforts and things like that, but I'm sure there's more to it than that. So your book, again, The Hurricane Within, is the book that we're talking about here. And so why don't you tell us a little bit more about the book and what it's all about?
Sure. Absolutely. So basically I wrote a story about my life and some things that I overcame both in my personal life and my military experiences. It's very multi-layered. I touch on a lot of big topics that everybody, you know, could experience: loss of a parent, addiction in the family, sexual assault, PTSD. And then I talk a lot about my Hurricane Harvey rescues. And, you know, for me, my faith has always been a foundation of me to have the ability to get through these big stressors in life. And I just found myself thinking I would you know, I wanted to share my story with others in the hopes that if one person was struggling with one issue in their life and they could relate to something that I said in my story and see how I got through it and make their life better, then for me, all the nerves of wanting to share my story and put my personal life on the spotlight, all those worries slowly dissipated because I realized if one person out of, you know, the potential hundreds of thousands of people that could read it, if one person was helped or saved or just spiritually uplifted or whatever the case may be, then it was work well done for me. So again, I kind of talk about a bunch of hot topics in my book. I don't go really into depth with a lot of it, but I'm currently working on a second edition where I kind of dive a little bit deeper into things that I necessarily wasn't ready to open up with in the first book. It's just kind of my passion project to inspire and share my faith, share my stories and struggles, be relatable, and hopefully help every reader in some significance.
Yeah, and that's I think a great thing about books like this is that you will be able to help people, whether you know them or not. You know, they may come across your book, they'll pick it up, they'll read it, and they'll hopefully relate to something that you wrote about. And that's a big part of, you know, why this podcast exists, is so that we can talk to people like yourself and other veterans who have experienced traumas or experienced something in their careers that that other veterans could relate to and know that they're not alone, just like you did with, you know, the people that you were with. And you talk to them and you found out, hey, I'm not alone in this. Other people are feeling the same way as me. And so that's, you know, a big reason of why this podcast exists, is to let other people know that you're not alone. There are people out there who are going through similar situations as you. And, you know, I think that's an excellent thing to have in your book, is, you know, your experiences and, you know, basically letting people know that they're not alone in all of this.
Yes. And, you know, honestly, Scott, I really, really value and appreciate what you do, because that's sort of the problem that I'm encountering now is getting my voice out. And I have the ability to, and the want and the passion to help people, but, you know, just getting on these platforms to share that, you know, really means a lot. And I know it means a lot to all the people that listen and all the people that you interview. So I just want to extend my thanks to you, because if one person hears this and is helped by it, then, you know, we're making moves in the world in a positive way. And that's something we can both be proud of.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the goal ultimately is to help people out. And, you know, books like yours, podcasts like mine, you know, stories that are told, you know, people, public speaking events where people get up and share their stories, you know, whatever the medium is that the story is being shared through, I think has an inspirational background, inspirational tone, I should say, and will encourage and uplift other people to kind of conquer their own demons, if you will.
Yes. And you know what? The world needs it. I feel like more than ever, it needs it now. I mean, I just feel like with the heaviness of things in the world, just being able to, you know, tune into your podcast or zone out and read my book, you know, I feel like, you know, this is the way to make change in the world. And, you know, it's awesome to be a part of this interview with you today, because it's going to impact somebody's life, I'm hoping.
Yeah, I hope so too. So with your book, I'm assuming it's available on Amazon and you know, probably other places online. Could you let people know, like, where they can go to find your book and what they can you know, maybe do to get in touch with you if they want to find out more about you and your story?
Absolutely. I would love to. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share that. So, as you mentioned, it is available on Amazon. I also recorded an audiobook for those who aren't big into ebooks or paperback books. There is an audiobook that's available on Audible and iTunes. And then also, You can go to my website. It's www.thehurricanewithin.com. And if anybody that is listening would like to invite me or host me for a speaking engagement or a book signing, there's an avenue through my website to do that as well.
Oh, that's great. And definitely, I would highly encourage anybody out there, other podcasters who might be listening, to reach out and get a little bit more of Ashley's story shared out to your audience. Help her promote this book and get other people reading it. I think that's like we were saying before, that's a great way to reach out to other people and help encourage them and support them.
Yes. Yes. And thank you again. And I appreciate you allowing me to be here and share, a sliver of my story. And, I would encourage the listeners as well. Please reach out to me either on, Facebook or Instagram. And if you want to talk a little bit more in depth, or if you have a personal experience similar to something in my book that you'd like to share with me, I always love connecting with other people. So I also am a big proponent of that as well.
Awesome. Yeah. And we'll have links to all of your social media and your website and link to the book all in the show notes. So anyone who's looking to pick up the book or get in touch with Ashley, please check out the show notes and you can find all of those links there. Ashley, it has been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. I'm really excited to be able to help share your story and get it out there to the listeners.
And thank you so much, Scott. And, you are honoring your brother in a huge way, and I want to give my condolences for that as well. But again, I know he is so proud of you for continuing on his legacy, as am I.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate those kind words.
You're very, very welcome.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.